for good ground or search out ambush sites. When nine stood against hundreds, such tactics were simply tiring. They wanted to be seen, to be counted. For years they had lived a lie, believing they protected the lots. And for years the fix had been deterred by only one mongrel. Now the Claymaster was dead, his legacy unjustly foisted upon a child. It was time for the half-orcs of the lot lands to mold their false purpose into something real. And they would do it with blood. Pointing his tulwar at the surging wall of orcs, Jackal kicked his mount forward.
"Live in the saddle! Die on the hog!"
Hooves thundered behind. Orcs swarmed ahead, swelling as the distance closed. It was a howling sea of bulging muscles, fanged jaws, curved swords, and heavy-bladed spears. The riders plunged into those bloodthirsty waters with no hope of returning. The wedge slammed into the massed orcs and pierced deep. At its head, Jackal slashed with his tulwar, severing spear shafts and ringing scimitars. Beneath him, his barbarian cleaved a path with its tusks. The charge scattered the orcs, trampling those directly in its path, but their numbers made it impossible to win through. Closing the wound, the fix bowled back in, pressing the sides of the wedge, squeezing it until it was forced to halt. Jackal heard a hog squeal in agony behind him, but he could not spare a look. Life shrank to the multitude of snarling faces before him and the swinging of his sword. Spears lunged at him, orcs screamed at him, and he lashed out at all. His tulwar lopped down upon necks and shoulders, but the fix primordial frames feasted upon the edge of the blade, turning death strokes into flesh wounds. Fetch and Oates were by his side, preventing the fix from reaching his flanks. Trained to battle, the barbarians bucked in tight arcs, sweeping and rending with their tusks. Jackal knew, even without seeing, that the wedge had become a ring. The hoof was surrounded, resisting the inevitable. A spear made it past Jackal's warding blade, scraping across his hip to lodge in his saddle. He opened the offender's throat with a reaping stroke, but there was no end to those wanting his blood. A scimitar swept in, wielded by a swart brute. Jackal turned the stroke, the force of it knocking him off balance. The orc seized the opening and lunged, dropping his weapon to seize Winnow by the tusks. The hog tried to rear, but the brute held her fast, fell muscles bulging. Horribly, impossibly, the orc dominated the swine as four spears punched into her chest and neck. Screaming, unable to escape the pain, Winnow began to spin wildly, her fear allowing her to break free. Jackal fought to keep his seat, but the hog was frenzied, spooked beyond control. With no other choice, Jackal jumped from the saddle. Winnow attempted to flee. Powerful in her pain-fueled rage, she barreled forward, trampling and goring, cutting a swath through the orcs. But her strength was flagging, and they drug her down to be butchered. Fetch and Oates closed ranks, shielding Jackal. He rose in the center of the ring and saw the end was near. Colquhoun's hog was dead. The Fang fought on foot, covered in blood, a scimitar in each hand. He raged with a savagery to match his enemies, screaming abuses at the orcs in their own tongue. The rest were still mounted, but as Jackal watched, Hobnail took a spear through the chest, the blow so fierce it came through his back and knocked him from his hog. Bounding forward, Jackal vaulted onto the barbarian's back, taking it in hand and slaying Hob's killer. But the fix struck with renewed furor. Next to Jackal, Mead let out a horrendous cry as his hand was hacked off by a scimitar. Gripper was dragged from his saddle and vanished amidst the ravaging press. Fetch's hog was killed beneath her. She rolled free and, using her dead mount as a barricade, fought on. The ring began to collapse. Letting loose shouts and curses, Jackal kicked Hob's hog forward. Ignoring his own defense, he allowed the orcs to surround him, hoping to draw them away from his brethren, even for a moment. He felt the edges of scimitars and the points of spears kiss his flesh. Damning the wounds, he continued forward, hell's bent on testing the limits of Atu Khan's relic to his final breath. He did not know when he was dismounted, only that somewhere in the red world he found himself again fighting on foot. His tulwar was broken, shattered on the skull of an orc. Taking up a spear, he slew until it too was sundered. Taller than he, stronger than he, the orcs threw themselves at him. They cut him, stabbed him, knocked him down, and pummeled him with iron knuckles. Yet he rose, cutting, stabbing, pummeling in return. Dozens lay beneath his feet. Yet scores stood before him. Gathering themselves, slavering with the coming kill, they stared at him with dark animal eyes. He braced himself to receive them. A great cry went up amongst the orc ranks, a single word bellowed in their savage tongue that Jackal did not catch. Every thick turned directly away from him and raised their weapons, howling as they charged. Bewildered, Jackal cast about and saw groups of riders coming in from all sides. Their mounts were great stags, the antlers imbued with a pale, ghostly light. On their backs were warriors with wild, plaited hair, shaven to the scalp down the sides of the skull. They loosed arrows from bows on the run, or impaled the orcs with wood-hafted war lances. The riders let loose an ululating cry as they killed, but the stags, though they ran mightily, were eerily quiet. Behind, Jackal heard a familiar voice, lifted in elation. Turning, he found his hoof a javelin's throw away, relieved of all foes, clustered together amidst the orcs they had killed. It was Polecat who cried out, laughing and pointing out the newcomers to Meade, whom he held close.
"The Tines! Hell's overburdened! It's the Tines!"
The elven hoof set upon the thicks without mercy. Riding in troops of 10, they seemed to hit from everywhere at once, never slowing. They were so swift, Jackal could not say how many they numbered. 80, at least. But the mongrels who rode with them were unmistakable. Warbler and Hoodwink were at the head of one troop, their stout hogs leading the harrow stags. They crashed into the nearest cohesive group of orcs and had at them. Other troops converged, herding and surrounding the soon-to-be outnumbered thicks. Jackal ran back to his hoof. Oates was still mounted, riding a protective circle around the others on Ugfuck, the only hog to have survived. Fetch was on her feet. The relief in Jackal's face at seeing her alive must have shown, for she grinned wearily. Polecat had managed to get Meade's stump bound, but the young blood was ghastly pale and on the verge of passing out. Dumdor had pulled Gripper's body out from amongst the dead thicks and stood beside it, staring blankly. Stumbling into their midst, Jackal's eyes settled on Hobnail's still, impaled form. Kneeling down, he put a hand on his fallen brother's shoulder. Fetch joined him, placing her hand atop his.
"Kulhoun?" Jackal asked, his voice raw.
Fetch lifted her chin toward the direction of the fighting.
"Went chasing after the orcs when they attacked the elves. That is one loony fuck."
Jackal tried to laugh, but it died in his throat.
"Looked like Hood with them," Fetch said. "But that other? Is that Warbor?"
"It is."
"Never thought to see him again."
It wasn't long before she did. The Tines finished off the orcs, and the old thrice rode up with a pair of elves. Dismounting, Warbler picked his way through the carnage, giving nods to the hoof, his eyes lingering longer on Oates and Fetch. She stood. Jackal did not bother to rise. Squatting down, Warbler regarded the body between them, but remained silent.
"How?" Jackal asked at last. "How did you get the Tines to help?"
Warbler shook his white head.
"You know it wasn't me, Jacko."
"Starling."
"We had to hole up for the betrayer. After, we were moving slow. Hood found us. Told me about being sent after Oates and all the strangeness at the kiln. Figured the Claymaster was making his move. Word had already spread amongst the nomads about the orc tongues and the lots. Still, I had to get those she-elves someplace safe, and that starling was insistent on dogfall. Tines were on us long before we even made it into their territory. They were already looking for her. Hoodwink and I were a sow's whisker from being lanced, but Starling vouched for us. Told her kin she had a debt owed. To you. Next I know, the she-elves are being taken away, and I got a pack of whooping point-ear warriors asking where we're going. Made for the kiln. You weren't hard to find after that. Still a heap I don't understand, Jackal, but I figured that can wait.
It can. What about Starling? The Tines accept her back?
Warbler's face answered the question before his words. No, son. Maybe they would have, but she went off alone. Jackal managed a nod of acceptance, and fought not to cast dark looks at the two elves now tending Meade's injury. A terrible howl went up over the battlefield, coming from the site of the Tines' last skirmish with the orcs. "That's probably the work of your fang friend," Warbler said, as the questioning glances fell upon him. "He insisted on letting one orc live. He's pulling all its teeth. Hoodwink and some of the point ears were happy to help him. Says it will bring a message back to the rest." The scream rang out again.
"Brutal. Simple," Fett said. "Might just work."
Jackal was too tired to agree, but he did hope. No teeth. Chapter 37 Jackal thanked the Unyar messenger and walked back to the orphanage. Entering the cool shade, he blinked the sunspots from his eyes. The bastards waited expectantly.
"Well?" Polecat asked, sitting atop one of the long, low dining tables used by the children.
"Strava has seen no sign of any orcs," Jackal told the room. Polecat spread his hands.
"That's it. That's all the lots."
Dumdor nodded slowly in agreement. Leaning against the wall next to the door, Hoodwink continued to clean his fingernails with a knife, saying nothing.
"You want to do another patrol, Jack?"
Thatch asked from her usual stool. Jackal didn't immediately answer. Near the fireplace, Oates shrugged, giving him the decision.
"It's been nearly a fortnight," Warbler said. "They ain't coming."
"They will always be coming," Jackal replied, staring at the floor. Polecat slumped a little.
"Our people can't stay with the Tusk tied forever."
"Some of them will," Meade said quietly, hand cradling his bandaged stump. There was silence for a long time. The incursion had not come. Jackal knew he needed to accept that the orcs had chosen to heed the warning, but his mind was plagued with visions of the Dulv-Mahar marching across Ulwandulas. 5 Alusuns had been sent. None of them made it back to Dargest. Zirko and the Unyars dealt with one, Bermudo and his Cavaleros another, though it was rumored the captain was grievously wounded and not likely to live. 2 of the Tongues came through the Old Maiden and made it into Hispartha, but the kingdom had been warned. The Fix were ambushed and every last one ridden down. Still, Jackal could not bring himself to say, to believe, that they were not coming.
"Let's put it to a vote," Fetch said at last. "Bring Winsome and the Slops home?"
"Can we have a separate vote for the Slops?" Polecat suggested playfully.
Fetch ignored him and raised her hand in favor. Katz went up readily, a grin on his hatchet face. Meade held up his good hand. Dumdor, still unsure of his new place within the hoof, waited to see what Jackal would do. Warbler, too, was reluctant to vote.
"What do you say, Warbor?"
Oates goaded, his own hand going up. The old-timer shook his head and gave a little laugh of self-mockery.
Keep forgetting I get a say.
You're a bastard again, Jackal told him. A mote of panic appeared in the old thrice's eyes as he considered. After a moment, he shook his head rapidly.
I say no. Too soon.
A knife seemed to sprout from the table next to Warbler's hand. All eyes snapped to the mongrel that had thrown the blade.
Hand up, Hoodwink told Warbler evenly. See her again. All right, Polecat said, swinging a finger toward Oates. He used to fuck your mother.
Oates came away from the fireplace just as Warbler stood up, both wearing the same threatening look. Polecat, sitting between two glaring thrice-bloods, bared his teeth sheepishly and mouthed an apology.
Just vote for the old man, Hood, and let's get this done, Fetch said, trying and failing to hide a smile.
Hoodwink raised a finger languidly.
5-3, Jackal said. Who wants to escort them home?
Polecat bounded to his feet.
Me!
By the hells you want some quim, Fetching criticized.
Polecat nodded excitedly and thumped his knuckles on Meade's shoulder.
We'll both go.
Jackal saw the younger half-orc hide his stump under the table, not looking at anyone.
Ride with me, Polecat urged, sitting down next to him and leaning in. The hogs the Fangs gave us are spirited. We would be at the Wallow in a few days. And I wager Sissy would go for being spitted between us.
I would just slow you down, Meade protested.
With visible effort, Polecat managed not to make a jest.
Hog shit!
You need to get back in the saddle, Fetch said.
Plenty of one-handed riders, son, Warbler put in.
Jackal found Meade's eyes on him.
What are you looking at me for? Go if you want, or don't. Your choice.
I just thought...
We haven't voted a new chief yet, Meade, Jackal reminded him.
Needs doing, though, Oates said pointedly.
Jackal shared a look with Warbler.
Let's not rush a vote, the old thrice said. It can wait until your... our folk get back.
Most of the hoof let it go at that, but Jackal could feel Fetching and Oates eyeing him, while Hoodwink gave Warbler a passive, yet fixed look. Polecat rode out with Meade as soon as their gear was gathered. Meade was unsteady in the saddle at first, but had begun to adjust before he was even out of sight. Winsome had been left untended since before the Betrayer Moon. Houses needed to be swept out and vermin chased away before the villagers returned, but that could wait a day. For now, the hoof was ready and eager to relax. Hoodwink went hunting, while Dumdor, unaccustomed to sleeping in a bed, snored loudly on the floor of the orphanage.
That's the most noise I've heard him make,
Fetch said in a hush, as she, Oates, and Jackal crept out to scrounge some wine. The cooper's shop next door provided, and they sat on the roof, passing the bottle for a while in silence.
You going to tell us why you're dragging your heels on the chief vote? Oates finally asked, handing the wine to his left so Fetch could take a pull.
Not dragging, Jackal said, waiting for the bottle to come his way.
Hog shit, Fetch said, smiling as she turned it over.
Jackal felt her fingers slide off his and was all too aware of their thighs touching.
After all that's happened with the Claymaster, you two think a chief is what this hoof needs?
Yes, Oates replied, without thought.
But Fetch considered the question.
The people of Winsome will need one, Jack. The kiln's gone. They're not going to feel safe. Having a leader is going to be necessary for those that do return, or they won't remain. Besides, what are the other hoofs going to think if the gray bastards don't have a chief?
I don't know, Jackal said, drinking.
Fetch robbed him of the bottle before he could take another pull,
and then refused to hand it over to Oates. A tugging match ensued, with Fetch defending her prize while being assailed from either side. Try as they might, Jackal and Oates could not pry the bottle from her agile and laughing form. At last, she allowed Oates to win. He finished the bottle in one long guzzle, while Jackal and Fetch groaned at him. Flushed with wine, Jackal watched Fetch bite down on her lower lip, trying not to speak, but the words were building on her tongue and would not be imprisoned. They came out in a drunken giggle. "Warbler and Beryl are going to fuck so hard when she gets back." Oates spewed off the roof. Jackal erupted with laughter. "Oh, hells, it's true. Remember the noise they used to make?" Crying and shaking, Fetch nodded adamantly.
"Shit on you both,"
Oates complained, his beard full of red droplets.
"I'm going to push you off."
Fetch was struggling to breathe. "Remember Warbler, when he would finish?" Jackal launched into an imitation, sounding something akin to a dying bear. Fetch pointed and reeled back into Oates, who was fighting a growing smile.
"Damn," the thrice said. "I'm gonna take Ugfuck on a really long patrol when they get back."
Soon, the three of them were laughing so hard, Dumdor emerged from the orphanage, roused from slumber, to glare up at them.
"Come join us,"
Jackal said, inviting the mute mongrel with a wave of his arm.
"We're out of wine," Fetch pointed out.
"I'll find more," Jackal volunteered, and made his way down. He was rummaging through one of the vintner's cellars when Warbler found him. Turning around at the sound of the old thrice coming down the ladder, Jackal held up a bottle and wobbled it questioningly. Warbler declined with a wave of his hand, propping himself against one of the lower rungs. They looked at each other for a moment, neither speaking. At last, Warbler took a deep breath.
"The Hoof is starting to think there is going to be a contest between us for the chief's seat," he said.
"There won't," Jackal replied simply.
"I know," Warbler said. "You still sure about this?"
"I could ask you the same."
"And I would say no, being truthsome. Besides, none of this is certain."
"It's the best decision for the Hoof, Warbor.
They might not see it that way."
"They will. You'll see. Now, if you will kindly remove your rump from the ladder, these bottles are sorely needed." Warbler moved out of the way with a grin. Jackal put a foot on the lower rung.
"You are welcome to join us.
Of course, you might not want to carouse too much. Save your strength."
"For what?" Warbler asked, frowning.
Smiling, Jackal began climbing the ladder and did his impression of the dying bear. That night, head pleasantly humming, he bedded down on the cot he had pulled out onto the portico of the orphanage. The air was hot and pregnant with the constant song of cicadas. He slept fitfully, the wine unable to drown the dreams of orcs on the march. He was awoken by a more pleasant dream, yet one he feared would come true, and feared it would not. Fetching crawled atop him, clothed only in silence. The warmth of her smooth skin was cool compared with the night's heat. The simple weight of her hardened him, and he slid in before he was fully aware. Her mouth found his, her tongue languid and searching. It was over embarrassingly, blissfully quick. She bit at his neck and grinned as he continued to pulsate. They lay together, and Jackal reveled in the slight breeze cooling the sweat that had formed in the crease between their bodies.
"I grew tired of waiting for you," she whispered.
"Wasn't sure. Last time was..."
"I know," she said, absolving him. "I didn't know either. Most nights we've been on patrol, and when we were here, it didn't seem right with Mead hurt. Be like cutting his cods off along with his hand if he found out."
"And Oates," Jackal added. "No telling what he would do."
"Nothing," Fetch laughed. "Who do you think dared me to come out here?"
Jackal shifted to look at her, seeing little more than the line of her exquisite jaw and the slivers of moonlight in her eyes.
"You're jesting."
"I'm not. He said I was a lily if I didn't try." "That still works? He said the same thing when we were children to get you to try and ride Border Lord." "Oh, I remember. I remember the broken collarbone, too."
Jackal smiled in the night, the fond thoughts of the past pushing his mind to the unknown future.
He ran his fingers gently down Fetching's spine. The motion, the affection, came more naturally than he wanted to ponder. He tried only to think about the moment, to live in the presence of the breeze and the cicadas, and the feel of Fetch's stomach against his. He tried not to think about how all this must end, and soon.
"You are not allowed to brood," Fetch chided, lifting herself up.
"What am I allowed, then?"
She shrugged. "Sleep? But you're a lily if you do."
She revolved her hips in a wonderfully torturous way. Jackal sat up and kissed her fiercely, their arms entwining. Rolling her beneath him, he bent to the task of not sleeping. It was another 12 days before Polecat and Mead returned with Winsome's inhabitants. Jackal and Fetch spent much of that time together, sneaking off and fooling no one. When Polecat rode in ahead of the main group, their time was over, and they both knew it. Fetching pulled Jackal into an empty house, and they sacrificed all that had become so recently familiar in a final, desperate coupling. They emerged just ahead of the tired folk. Hogs carried some of the slopheads, and donkeys some of the villagers, but most were walking. They flowed sore-footed into their village, and the hoof turned out to meet them. Fewer villagers returned than Jackal had hoped, but they lost fewer slops than he anticipated. Only 4 of the hopefuls chose to test their worthiness with the tusked tide. Biro was one of them. Jackal could not judge the youth harshly. The gray bastards were not the hoof they once were. Sissy returned, much to Polecat's satisfaction, as did Thistle, both helping herd the flock of orphans who ran back to their home with gleeful enthusiasm. Beryl walked at the rear of that shrieking gaggle, leading a lone, wide-gated child by the hand.
"Thank all the gods I can't name," Oates declared, at seeing Wiley alive.
Jackal sighed in agreement. As they walked down the dusty avenue to meet Beryl, they saw that the little thrice was already wearing bandages to conceal his affliction.
"Most of the other children won't play with him anymore," Beryl confessed softly, as she embraced them both.
Jackal gave Oates a knowing look. "Well, who needs them when you've got—"
"Bears and mountains!" Oates bellowed,
stooping to hoist Wiley into the air and planting him astride his massive shoulders. The thrice-bloods went away together, the little one giggling from the furthest reaches of his round belly as the big one bounded and hollered. Beryl watched them play, a small, tremulous smile on her face.
"He's in pain, Jackal. You wouldn't know it to look at that joyful face, but he is."
"You need some rest," Jackal told her. "But I should warn you, there is someone here that wants to see you."
"Mead told me," Beryl said,
her face tight with a bevy of controlled emotions.
"Where is he?"
"Waiting by the farrier's well. If you would rather wait, I can tell him later would be best." Beryl shook her head.
"No, waiting isn't much of a virtue."
Jackal had never laid eyes upon a queen, wouldn't know it if he had, but if they carried themselves with any less strength than the half-breed matron walking away from him, they weren't worthy of any regal title. There was no more putting it off. Jackal spread the word that the hoof would meet after sundown in the cooper's shop, one of many that would remain empty because its proprietor had chosen not to return. Perched atop barrels
and lounging on half-finished coffins, the mongrels waited for everyone to arrive. Polecat was the straggler, still out of breath and lacing his breeches. There was some good-natured ridicule and shaking of heads, but then everyone settled, every face reflecting the importance of the meat. There was no table, no voting axes, no stump, no chief seat. Just 8 sworn brethren sitting in a rough cluster. Jackal had placed himself on a workbench, no more prominent than the others, yet he found all eyes looking at him. "We are here to select a new chief," he said, accepting that he had to speak first. "Likely most of you know who you want leading this hoof. I know my mind is made up. But before we vote, there are some things you need to hear." Jackal looked at Warbler, and the attention in the room shifted. The old thrice took a deep breath, remaining seated as he spoke.
"I helped found this hoof. Hells, in some ways I helped found them all. I remember the day we laid the first stone of the kiln. I followed our chief loyally for years, until I began to see what he was becoming. After a time, I wanted to lead the Gray Bastards, felt it was my duty. I still do."
Warbler paused for a moment, seemed to lose his thoughts. He ran a hand through his thick, white hair.
"None of you truly know me, saving Hoodwink, but I have been struggling to save this hoof for longer than some of you have been alive. It was a damn fool thing to try. One mongrel can't do it. A hoof has to survive as a hoof. The Gray Bastards are far from saved, though we have been freed from the Claymaster's madness. I'm proud to be back where I belong, where my heart always was. I could lead this hoof. I could, and do it well. But there is another duty for me, far more important. One mongrel can't save a hoof, but one mongrel can save one child."
The room was still.
"I am taking Wiley to live at Dogfall," Warbler continued, with a small, hopeful smile. "The Tynes have agreed to try and help him, rid him of that damn plague. I don't know a heap of hog shit about wizardry, but the elves do. They think that, in time, they can cure him. If not, they have assured me they can do what that swaddlehead did, and force the plague to move."
"Into you?" Mead said. Warbler nodded.
"They suspect it can go from one thrice into another. Something about how the Tyrkanian crafted it." "Then I should be the one to go," Oates insisted. "That backy tub wanted to put it in me. Stop laughing, Polecat!"
"You can't go, Oates," Jackal said. "Warbler knows the Tyne tongue. You don't."
"Still doesn't account for him being allowed to enter Dogfall," Mead said. "The Tynes are known for rarely allowing other elves within their land, much less 2 half-orcs."
"We understand less about their ways than we think," Warbler said. "They took in those elves I brought out of the marsh, and not one of them was a Tyne. They trust me, as far as they can, I think. Even if they don't, I suspect they know how important the plague still is to protecting the lots. Perhaps they're simply using me. Either way, they have agreed to allow the 3 of us to come live in their gorge."
Polecat's brow creased.
3? Warbler looked at Oates. "It's the other reason you can't go, Idris. Your mother would never allow you to take on that sickness."
"Beryl's going with you?" Fetching asked, wearing a bemused smile.
"Do you think she would be separated from the boy?" Warbler returned.
Mead looked at Jackal. "How? How did you get them to agree to this?"
"They didn't take much convincing," Jackal admitted. "Warbler's right. The Tynes know the importance of the plague. It's dangerous and useful. We're lucky the orcs did not proceed with the incursion. If they had, we wouldn't have been able to stop them.
Until Ulwandulas is stronger, more united, the plague is necessary. We also gave the Tynes something they wanted. Revenge on those who were delivering elf slaves to the Sludge Man. Sancho and the Bog Trotter himself are dead. But there was one more still alive. Captain Ignacio. Warbler told the Tynes about him. They were eager to pursue. Likely he is seeing Dogfall at this very moment, but he will never leave alive. Warbler blew out his cheeks.
So there it is, lads, and Fetch. I can't lead the Grey Bastards, much as I want to, but I would be grateful to remain sworn to the Hoof.
Vote it, Oates barked. Hands up to let the old man call himself a bastard while languishing in the Umber Mountains.
Every hand went high. Hell's Warbore, Fetching teased. You only had Hood's vote anyway.
No, Polecat said lightly. I was going to throw for him. Sorry, Jack. Now if you had been fucking Oates's mother...
An empty bucket went down over Cat's head, and Oates drummed hard on the sides. As the raucous laughter reached its pitch, Oates yelled gleefully over the ruckus.
Jackal as chief! Hands up!
There was a shout of approval, and the vote went up, every arm raised save for Warbler's, who looked at Jackal solidly. Fetch caught that look before the rest.
I'm leaving, Jackal said, meeting her eyes.
The Hoof, hearing his words, grew silent. Oates's smile vanished.
What?
I'm leaving, Jackal repeated, louder. I can't be chief.
The fuck you can't, Oates declared.
Fetch was horribly silent. Jackal swept the Grey Bastards.
This Hoof has a long ride ahead. If I am with you, leading you, we won't survive.
Hispartho wants my head. Bermudo had already sent word to powerful nobles about me, and that was before I escaped from the Castile and killed their wizard. As a nomad, they have little hope in finding me.
So you're running to save your hide?
It was Fetch, her teeth clenched.
To help this Hoof, Jackal replied.
You are going to need Hisparta's aid to build a stronghold. With me in your ranks, they will never trade with you. And it's not just the blue bloods up north who demand payment from me. Brethren, I don't know what Zirko truly did to me, but I can tell you his hold is real. I made a bargain, willingly, and it saved my life more than once. I cannot escape my pledge to stand at Strava. The Betrayer Moon will find me there until I am dead. That much has been proven. But it goes deeper than that. Zirko may demand more of me, and if he does, I will not have a choice. You don't need a chief that is pulled away by the whims of a priest. But most important, I cannot remain because I have to find Crafty. So long as he's alive, we are not safe. The lots are not safe. I won't have us rebuild all we have lost, only to have him return and pull it all down. He came to us and the Claymaster welcomed him, brought him into our midst, but we allowed it. I allowed it. I rode with him, fought with him, even grew to think of him as a friend. But one of us saw the wizard for what he was from the very start, and cautioned me against him. One of us put the lives of the Hoof before all other loyalties. That is the one you need leading you. That is the one I now raise my hand for. Jackal stood and put his hand up. Fetching. She looked sharply up at him, thinking for a heartbeat she was being mocked. But then she saw the stolid resolve he directed at her, and grew very still.
You are the best shot in the Hoof, he told her, not looking at the reactions of the others, nor caring. You are the fiercest fighter we have. Fearless, bold, frightening. The Tynes know you carry their blood. Our alliance with them will strengthen once they see your existence does not sully them, but honors them. And they will see it, because you will show them, as chief. You are not charmed by wizards, nor cowed by Hisparta. You would spit into the eye of every noble they have with a thrumbolt if they dared challenge you,
as you did the day you killed that cavalero. Let Hisparta chase me for that crime, while the true threat grows stronger, bringing this hoof back from the brink with her leadership. Gray bastards, I call a vote. Fetching for our chief. Looking beyond him, Fetch produced a wry smile. Their hands were already in the air, Jack. Turning, Jackal found she was right.
Mine was up right after yours, brother, Oates said.
Fetch stood and looked at her hoof.
You fool ass is going to do what I say?
Oh, yes, Polecat said, his eyes glazing. Anything. You tell me to lick your quim, and I will serve without question.
If I need that done, I'll ask Sissy, Fetch returned. She tells me you're hopeless at it.
Laughter boomed through the cooper's shop, needling Polecat. So, Jackal addressed Fetch when all was calm. Do I have your leave to ride alone, yet still call myself a gray bastard? Fetching's eyes narrowed.
No.
The silence stiffened, and Jackal lowered his eyes.
None of you do, Fetch declared. The gray bastards were the Claymaster's hoof. We need to leave that behind.
She looked at Jackal and Warbler.
In honor of the two mongrels that challenged our founder and, even in defeat, stayed loyal, I say we become what they always remained. True bastards.
Jackal glanced at Warbler.
It's a good name, the old thrice said, clearing his throat against rising emotion.
Fetch put a hand on their shoulders.
And these two, no matter where they go, will forever be members of our hoof. Brothers, if you're opposed, stick a knife in that table.
No one moved. Fetch winked at Jackal.
There's your answer.
Thank you.
When will you leave?
She asked, keeping her voice steady.
Dawn.
The true bastards spent the night in celebration with the people of Winsome. At last, the last jug was drained, the last echoes of song and laughter faded. Jackal went to his usual spot and lay there, sleepless, until the sky began to brighten. It was an uninviting sight. She had not come to him, nor he to her, though he fought the urge with every long moment. Unwilling to listlessly watch the impending pain of the day draw closer, Jackal rose and gathered his gear. The village slept as he made his furtive preparations. Walking to the stables, he saw a wain moving toward him, pulled by the massive, grunting form of Big Pox, the Claymaster's hog. Warbler and Beryl sat upon the seat, and the old thrice pulled the hog to a stop as Jackal approached. Peeking over the side, he found Wiley asleep on a pallet amongst the supplies.
Getting out before the others are awake, he said quietly.
You too,
Beryl said, with a hint of reprimand. Jackal smiled at her and looked at Warbler.
Not taking mean old man? Left him for you, the old thrice said. A hog like that is wasted cooped up in a gorge. Besides, the pointy ears are likely to force me to ride a harrow stag before long. That pig was born for the nomad life. He'll serve you well, wherever you go.
I'll take good care of him, Jackal said. And thank you. Beryl leaned down and kissed him once, giving his face a fond pat as she withdrew.
We didn't make it out wholly unseen. You'll find two in the stables waiting to ambush you.
Jackal smiled and felt his heart flutter. The wain continued on down the avenue. Oates was already astride Ugfuck when Jackal entered the stables. It took him a moment to understand these were the two Beryl meant. He tried to mask his disappointment, but Oates caught it all the same.
She isn't one for farewells, brother.
That is true, Jackal agreed, pulling mean old man's harness from a peg.
Besides,
She said watching us part was going to get all backy, and she didn't want to see it.
Jackal hummed a laugh. Oates waited in silence for him to get his hog saddled. At last, he was mounted and ready, but he did not turn his hog toward the stable doors. Instead, he looked at Oates.
"You should stay here," he said.
Oates frowned.
"Just keeping you company until the edge of the lot."
"You go too far and you won't come back."
"I know," Oates admitted.
"Cornered me good, you cunning shit."
"She is going to need you at her side, Oates."
The thrice nodded once, sharply.
"Then that's where I will be, until you get back."
Urging his hog up alongside Ugfuck, Jackal leaned in the saddle and embraced his friend. Pulling away, they looked at each other for a moment.
"Hells," Oates groaned. "She was right."
Jackal laughed and clapped the thrice on the shoulder. "See you at the Betrayer."
"Fuck that! I'm letting someone else take a turn watching you get worshipped by waddlers, arm of cock in hand."
Shaking his head as he turned away, Jackal spurred his hog out of the stables. As he rode down the avenue at a healthy trot, he saw Fetching standing on the roof of the cooper's shop. He did not pause, knowing it would be impossible to leave if he did. Her voice called down to him as he passed.
"Bring me a wizard's head back from Tir Kanya."
He waved.
"Yes, chief."
Leaving Winsome behind, he went east. Mean Old Man's gait was smooth and strong. He did not have Hearth's raw speed, but his girth felt solid, a deep well of endurance. The sun climbed higher, and the heat of Ulwandulas rose with the dust beneath the barbarian's hooves. Jackal's home grew more distant with each pounding step. The unridden surface of the world lay ahead. This is Will Dameron. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Grey Bastards by Jonathan French. This program was directed by Harry Nangle. Executive producer, Juliana Wilson. Text copyright 2018 by Jonathan French. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.